Did you have fun at the show this week?
The VFRC launch show was a good time.
Super cool time. They had a good raffle.
Smitty was down there judging some birds.
Yeah, a good little lawn show. They did an auction afterwards, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, some good birds there. That's where you get the good ones.
Yeah.
You want to talk about the flies that you guys were doing?
The World Cup qualifier last weekend as well. I got free ice cream. I got the DQ. Charlie put up banging kit. I think it was 1,072 points. I got to watch that kid on Saturday.
That's awesome.
It was pretty cool. Rick, I think he got around 250 some points. And there was Charlie's brother, Ricky. He flew his birds. And then there was, who else? Who else flew? Chacon flew. Quite a few guys. It was pretty cool. But Charlie's going to be the qualifier. Looks like perhaps Charlie and Rick. I'm not sure how that went. I think it's maybe Charlie with two kids.
Pretty good, Charlie.
But congratulations. A lot of tough flyers out there. It's no easy game, I'll tell you that. I'm just getting a taste of it. And it's going to take a lot of work to beat these fellas.
Yep. You got some good birds out there, good kids, lots of training going into it to get those numbers.
Oh yeah, no, it's that anybody that's flying against him, they good luck to you guys, because Charlie's got some birds over there. What else did we learn this weekend? I turned a feral pigeon loose that somehow stuck in my loft months ago. I turned him loose twice, two different places. Now he identifies as a homing pigeon. Come back.
Now you're training him to come back. That's the funny thing. The more you try to get rid of him, the more he's driving in that instinct of coming back.
He comes home faster than some of my young homers do when I drop him from closer. It's crazy.
Well, some of these ferals that you see on the street, you know, they're probably coming from lines of people's race birds who, you know, didn't get home but are still race birds.
Yeah, these, I don't know what these are. These are weird looking. They don't look like a roller. Well, they do look like a roller, but with a really long tail.
Huh.
I don't know what they are. They don't fly high. Just flies around most of the time, but he can fly back a couple of miles pretty quick.
Well,
you got any babies over there?
Yeah, I got my white homers are breeding really good. I had a set of parlor roller eggs that I should have candled earlier on in the game when the day came for them to hatch. It didn't happen, so the next day I candled them, and sure enough, it was just fluid in there. So I got to get better about candling so they're not sitting on nothing for 2 weeks. I kind of thought that they would know, but not always the case. But yeah, my white homers, they're making babies. My fantails, they're making babies. I just picked up a new pair of standards, and they've already been driving at each other even in quarantine. So it'd be pretty cool to get some of those guys.
Nice.
Yeah, even my race team is making eggs in the race loft, so I got to watch that too.
Yeah, it's that time. My assistant loft manager came and gave me the production report today. Here we go. I got five babies right now out there. It's not including the stuff that's already banded. That's just new ones, so that's cool. Let them do their thing.
That's what I was just going to say. I like this about the season, because it's a lot of the other stuff that we do for training the pigeons, whether it's, you know, your roller kit or your racing kit. This is one of the things that we want them to do that they do pretty much all on their own. Make more of themselves. Like I said, even my race team, even though they're getting turned out and flying, one of them is, you know, hiding behind a 2x6 in there, and the other one's got eggs on the floor. So it's like, okay, you know, I saw the pair that made the one set of eggs. I'm actually kind of excited to see what comes out of that. It wasn't planned or nothing, but I think it'll be pretty good looking colors on that bird. It's a red chick and it's a black with white flights. So the black with white flights is the cock bird.
Yeah. Have you got any busters going yet?
Yeah. So I got some racing homers. I'm using those fosters in the breeder loft, and they're just sitting on the white eggs for the white homers. I guess all eggs are white, but okay. The episode tonight, we're going to be talking with Bonnie Lewis. We're going to be talking Pomeranian powders. This was requested by a listener, Maya Vakovic out of Western Canada. So I guess her dad had done Pomeranian powders, and she's kind of picking up his legacy and carrying it on. And asked if we could bring on somebody to talk Pomeranian powders. And Bonnie Lewis, she's had pigeons for 41 years, and specifically Pomeranian powders for the last 24. So, and she has some pretty older birds too, so she knows how to take care of racer guys who got 20-year-old racing homers in their loft still, and that's pretty amazing, really.
I have a couple of birds that are over 10.
Yeah, are they breeding for a year?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Matter of fact, I gave away a bird, a white homer, not too long ago. That was like a 2012 model, so that sucker was 11-12 years old. It was a white racer. It was weird. I gave him a half a dozen birds. All of them was young, but that one, and they're hard to tell apart when they're young. And he got 5 hens and 1 cockbird.
Oh, and wow.
The cockbird's old as hell. Yeah. It didn't quite work out for him. I guess he's lost all those. That was Alex.
Oh, okay. Okay. You still have some horseman powders, right?
I have 2 pair. They need a home. Anybody in the greater Phoenix area looking for to raise horseman powders?
They're cool birds.
Come see me. They're cool. I'm flying 2 of them, and I'm almost 92.35% sure that the young one is a hen. So I got a pair outside flying, and I got a pair inside that are breeding. Yeah.
What are some of the powder and crapper breeds that you've had?
Well, let's see. I had the I've still got Vorbergs.
Yeah, that's right.
Vorbergs, Brunners, and these guys, the Horsemans. So that's the only 3 breeds I've had, I think. And I'm slowly working my way away from those 2. Got some classic old frills left. Super cool breed. I'll recommend those to anybody. Which, by the way, one of the questions in the chat, what type of pigeon would you start out with? Knowing what you know now, what would you start out with? Not free pigeons, you bonehead.
I mean, that, regardless of breed, man, you know me, free pigeons, geez, all day. But realistically, I mean, even the idea of a homer to me seems kind of like in the same aspect of free, because most of them are free that are homers, I guess, and you see a lot of them. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, it had to be something you liked, because you're gonna get frustrated sometimes, and if it's something you like, then you'll stick with it, I guess. But
let me give you an example. I started with classic frills. Great breed, in my opinion. Might be a little difficult to breed. I think it depends on what you want to do with them. Hi, Bonnie.
Hello.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on. I know it's like 10 o'clock your time and a little bit later on the East Coast, but we appreciate you coming on with us.
Oh, not a problem. I'd stay up actually watching TV anyways.
I appreciate that. We always need listeners.
That's right. So we got here with us Bonnie Lewis. She's had pigeons for over 41 years, had Pomeranian powders specifically for 24 years. Taking care of 8 different lofts, I think it was, and she's judged a lot of local shows. So Bonnie, you're taking care of 8 different lofts right now?
Yeah, I have 8 lofts. The largest loft is 42 foot by 12 foot by 16 foot, and then there's 7 other lofts besides that.
How many birds do you have roughly right now?
Approximately 450.
How many different breeds are in that mix?
Oh my gosh. Probably a good 20 or more.
So you've been raising pigeons since 1983, huh?
Yeah, I got my first pair of pigeons in 1983. And well, as they say, you start off with 1 pair, and then it turns into a whole other type of insanity, and that's what it did.
We were just talking about that, the first kind of birds to get you started. What kind of birds did you have as your starter pair?
I had a pair of Indian fantails. We had went up to a bird show, and we thought it was an exotic parrot show up in Arlington Heights, Illinois, and it was an exotic poultry and pigeon show, and that was the first time I had ever seen anything other than your standard pigeon. They were fantails, and I absolutely fell in love with them. And I guess that there was a guy that lived probably 5 miles from my house that raised them. So of course, that next weekend I was out there at his place, and I bought a pair of Indian fantails. And I ended up, over the years, I got like 42 babies off of them. Wow. So that's where it all started.
So they were very prolific breeders.
Yeah, they were. And they bred, actually, I kept them, because in Illinois you can have a thing called a basement, which we can't have here in Florida. It would be called an indoor pool if we had it in Florida. Well, it would be. Sure it is.
We don't have basements here either.
Yeah, no basements in Arizona.
No, but at least yours wouldn't be an indoor pool. Ours would be. It would be a quagmire. It'd be a mess. So I kept them in the basement, and actually I had a huge areca palm, and the planter was about 5 foot across. And they pretty much lived in the base of the planter, and that's where they built a nest, raised their young, and did all of that. It made for an interesting party room to have the pigeons down there with everything else.
That's all natural. That's pretty cool.
And then when I moved down here to Florida, and I don't remember where, but there was an old, the old black and white American Pigeon Journal. Somebody had one sitting around, and on the front cover was a Pomeranian Pouter. And I looked at that and I said, well, that's a pretty awesome looking bird. So I took the magazine with me, and I looked in the back to see if anybody had any for sale. And there was a phone number there that had the same area code as mine. And I thought, oh, well, it can't be that far away. Well, it turned out that would be Chet Davis. And he literally lived right across the highway from where I lived. So of course I called him up, and he was a gruff, grumpy old guy, rest his soul. And he said, I got Pomeranian Pouters, come on over and see him. So we went over there, and then he was like, well, I don't know if I have any for sale. And I said, well, you had an ad in the APJ, so you better sell me a pair. So he sold me the first pair, and that was 24 years ago. And that rest was history, basically.
What colors? I saw a lot of the pictures that you've posted of your Pomeranian Pouters. What colors do you have with those right now?
Oh, I've got blue bars, and I've got blacks, and I've got self blacks, and I've got black checks, and I've got blue checks, and I've got cream bars, and I've got mealies, and I've got brown bars, and I've got silvers, and I've got black and white splash, and I've got yellow, and I've got yellow and white splash, and I've got, I don't know what color you would call them. I call them crazy quilts. They're a white brown, and they kind of have that's a brown and black speckling. It's not a grizzle, it's a splash. It's like a speckling, like a roan horse would have. And then they have like a gold bib.
Is there a standard for that color?
No, I've never seen one like it in my life. Never. They're really stunning looking birds.
How big is a Pomeranian Pouter?
Well, if I could get one to stand still to measure it, they're probably a good 12 to 14 inches high, probably about 16 inches long, and probably close to probably a 20 to 24 inch wingspan easily. They should be a good heavy bodied bird. They should have nice, thicker legs. A lot of people breed other stuff into them, because if you breed them too close, you start to get a more horizontal bird with shorter, stubbier legs. So a lot of people will start to breed them out with English and other stuff to get the height back on them. But then you get them sometimes too tall or too leggy, and then they look kind of odd too. They're supposed to have that kind of massive, strong, powerful look to them.
That was the first thing that kind of shot. The first Pomeranian pounder I saw was at the Utah show. And I was just, the size of the bird is what kind of shocked me. It was, you know, they have it in its own cage too. It had to be in a bigger cage than all the other birds. And yeah, it really was a big bird, real powerful looking bird for sure.
Yeah, they're supposed to be. I also have old German croppers, which are probably about twice the size of the Pomeranians.
Really? Wow. What's the origin of the breed? What were they intended for?
Well, they came from the Pomerania region over in Europe, Germany. I'm not really certain what they were bred for. They weren't bred for the stew pot. They're not a utility, and they're obviously not a flying bird, or at least mine aren't. Mine can, if they get out, I can walk them down across the yard. They're not really aerodynamically designed to fly up and long distance. So I would assume that they were bred to be what I call, like, you know, yard pretties or loft pretties. Just something that's visually pleasing would be what I would think they were bred for, because they really don't do much of anything else.
they got a pretty mild temperament, do they? Or are they pretty flighty?
No, they're sweethearts. They actually have a reputation as being one of the, if not the friendliest breeds of pigeons out there.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They're absolutely wonderful. The ones that I like to show a lot of times, I will take and pull the babies and I hand feed them. And then that makes them even more friendly towards, you know, people and being handled and everything.
I know with different powders and croppers, sauerkraut is an issue. Have you had many issues with this breed specifically for the sauerkraut?
No, I don't, because over the years, for me anyways, I have figured out what causes it and how to prevent it. And one of the biggest ways to cause it is to A, feed pellets, B, feed corn in any way, shape, or form, and C, to let them graze freely throughout the day. When I go out there in the morning, I give them their food. They have 15 or 20 minutes to eat it. And after that, their food is pulled and they're done for the day. And I truly do not have problems with sauerkrauting.
What do you feed them?
I use a good 6-grain mix. The one I use is by Lizzie May. They're out of Millersburg, Ohio. It's 14% protein. It's got a lot of the Canadian peas in it that they so dearly love. I found really that anything below 14%, if you've got young, the young will get spraddle-legged, because you've got to get a lot of protein in the parents so the parents can feed the young, because if they don't get enough protein, they grow too quickly and then they get spraddle-legged. And then you either have to, you know, try to tie their legs together and cure it, or, you know, bye-bye birdie.
I've never heard that. I've heard that sometimes when that happens, that it's a genetic thing and that nothing can be done. So that's the first I've heard that. But it makes sense that if they can grow faster than they can form it right, it's interesting.
Well, if you look at game birds, especially like the little quails, little button quails, if you don't give the little button quails like game bird starter, which has got high protein, every single one of those chicks that you hatch will have spraddle legs. Literally every single one. But if you use game bird starter, which is higher in protein, they grow quicker and they don't get spraddle legged. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense that has something to do with it, because I used to feed the 11% protein and I would have problems with spraddle leg. At first I thought, oh, the parents are sitting too hard, or there's issues somewhere. And then I got to thinking about the game bird and the game bird chow, and I thought, wonder if there's something to that. So I just bumped up the protein level and have not had an issue with it since. So
that's good information.
You know, I mean, for me, that seems to have taken care of that problem.
Is there a national club for the Pomeranian powders?
There's actually two. There's the national, there's National Powder and Cropper, and then there's Central Powder and Cropper Club. Okay. And that's all powders and coppers fall under that. I mean, there's like the Pygmy Powder Club, and there's the Bruner Powder Club, and there's some other powder clubs, but there's the two main ones are the National Powder and Central Powder.
One thing that we didn't mention when describing these birds is their feet.
Oh, they have the most incredible feet. they really do. They get, I've got birds out there that have got 10-inch long feathers on their muffs.
Wow.
Yeah. You got to band them real early. You're not going to get a band on them.
What kind of perches do you use with them feathered feet?
Well, what I have in my loft, and I had my big loft specifically built for Pomeranian powders. I've got 18-inch by 18-inch nest holes rather than your standard 12 by 12 because, the bowl has to fit, mom and dad has to fit, the babies have to fit in there somewhere out of the bowl when mom and dad go and, start sitting on eggs again. So when I had that built, I crossed the front of each one, I have a rail that's made out of like 1x2s, and they can very happily, they perch just like a parrot on a 1x2. And then I also have across the front of my loft, the entire 42 foot, I've got a 2-inch by 6-inch board that I used to sit on because I would spend literally hours out there sitting and watching and looking for potential problems and seeing if someone isn't acting right. And the birds love to stand on it, and they walk back and forth on it. Mostly, though, they are either on the floor or they're up in their nest bowls and pigeon things.
And with this breed specifically, what are some of the tips that you can give beginners for conditioning a Pomeranian, getting it ready for a show?
The main things, as with anything, is feed it good, clean food. Make certain it has clean water. Keep it sprayed for bugs so you don't get holes in the feathers, so you don't get mites that suck the blood out of it. That's really probably about it. It's all basically good husbandry. I put about a tablespoon of bleach in each gallon of water. So that way, if they do crap in the water is still technically bacteriologically clean. Even if it doesn't look real good, it's still clean. And they do take baths in it, and so it does keep the white muffs nice and clean, keeps their feathers nice and white and shiny. The Pomeranian powders are one of those birds you just can't go out there and throw grain at them and say, bye-bye, see you tomorrow. I probably spend 4 or 5 hours a day, every single day, out there in those lofts. Between feeding and watering, I scrape out the nest boxes every single day. I wouldn't want to stand in my own crap. I don't want them to stand in their own crap. I check their feet all the time to make certain they don't have, crap balls stuck on their toes so they don't get bumblefoot.
Yep.
I check their feet because their nails will overgrow and then their toes turn sideways and then they limp. So you gotta kind of watch that because you can't see it because it's all under the feathers. I check and make certain that the band hasn't slipped up over the hawk because it's easy to not notice because they're so heavily feathered. You don't want that to happen because then all of a sudden one day your best bird foot drops off.
Now, is that happening because you're using an oversized band?
No, if you have to band them when they're really young, because you're not going to get that band on. But if you're like me and you have a tendency to wait a day or two, it becomes an issue to get the band on, and then it can slip up. A toe can come out.
Okay.
It's a pigeon, all kinds of weird things can befall them because you're not out there with them 24 hours a day. It's not like a dog sitting there at your feet where you can watch it 24 hours a day.
Sure.
Why when I go out there and after I get done feeding and watering and cleaning everybody, I sit on the bench and I just watch the birds and I make certain that nobody's looking droopy, that everybody goes running for their food, that everybody's taking care of the babies, nobody's limping or holding a foot funny or anything. And I just watch. The trick is if there's something going on with the bird, or if you have to get a feeling about the bird, if you've ever looked at a bird and the bird looks okay, it's acting okay, but you're just kind of like, yeah, you know, I don't know, something, I got a feeling something's not right with the bird. Yeah, you know, immediately address it. By the time a bird, any bird, starts to look sick, it's like really sick and probably circling drain and may not make it. You know, because we all know birds hide illnesses because a sick bird in the wild is a dead bird.
Now, do you medicate or do any preventatives or vaccinate?
No, I don't. In my opinion, and I've got a degree in pharmacology, in my opinion, it's like, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So if it's not sick, I'm not going to medicate it. I've been to people's lofts and they've always got the yellow water going on and this, that, and the other. And all they're doing is you are eradicating the bird's immune system. There's no need to medicate a bird that is not sick. If they have a good, strong, natural immune system, then, you know, you don't need to do that. If I notice that somebody is not doing well, they're immediately pulled. Try to, you know, ascertain what the problem is, medicate accordingly, and the bird goes in quarantine. So that's what I do. I don't medicate everybody just because one bird is not looking right. You know, except when it comes to worms, because then it's just like, well, you know, the worms is one bird. Well, everybody's got them, so then everybody gets medicated. But I mean, if, you know, somebody's got a one eye cold or something like that, no, you treat the bird that's sick and you isolate it. If not, you just set your stuff up for problems. You know, just like with humans, you don't just be like, oh, I think I'm just going to take some antibiotics, because then right. You get, you know, antibiotic resistant bacteria and stuff, and then that's no good.
So you have, I also saw that you had some birds that were a little bit older. What are some of the older birds that you have in there? How old are they?
I have it's got to be a record. I have a 2008 Norwich Copper, believe it or not, and he still he picks up feathers and he prances around and he presents them to females. I mean, it doesn't do him any good. It's like having a Rottweiler with her teeth, but he tries. And then I've got some hens and some cockbirds that are 2012 that I breed out of.
Really, still breeding? That's amazing.
Yeah. Once again, it's all, you know, it's husbandry. You get out of them what you put into them.
Yeah.
And then I have a hen that's she's a 2012, but she's totally blind. And I have to keep her separate because the males will just brutalize her if I don't. But she would sit rocks if I would give her rocks, you know.
Wow.
So she has a bowl. If I find eggs on the floor, that young hens, they just lay them on the floor, then they walk away. I call those welfare eggs, you know.
Yeah.
She'll hatch those out. She will feed babies. I've got several sets right now that are raising three babies each, two of their own and one of somebody else's. So I just found an egg. It's like, oh, here you go. Congratulations. And I've always said it's a good thing that my birds can't count, because they'd be like, something's not right here. You know, so they make excellent parents. You know, and then people are just like, oh, well, mine don't feed their own. It's just like, well, something's wrong, because mine feed theirs, they feed others. If I have a baby that hits the floor, it becomes like a group effort. I've got several hens that will run over and feed. I've got cockbirds that will run over and feed until I discover, you know, the next day that the bird has hit the floor. I've never had an issue with scout chicks. In my book, they are excellent parents. I've never had a problem. Some of my breeders, I do clip their muffs, and some of them I don't. You know, it just kind of all depends. If they've got real extreme muffs, then I do, because they can inadvertently scoop the eggs out or scoop the babies out if they're getting in and out.
Right.
But if they just have your average, you know, like 4 or 5, 6 inch muffs, I don't. And they seem to be fine. They don't, it doesn't seem to get in the way of breeding or sitting or anything else.
Is yours an open loft or a closed loft? Do you breed in individual cages? And
No. They have 42 foot to fly and do whatever they want to do. The way I had my loft built, it's about 4 foot up off the ground. They have expanded steel floors. On top of the expanded steel, I've got 1/4 inch welded wire so that nothing like raccoons can come up from the bottom and grab legs and pull them off. There's a sun coop all the way across the front. At the top, the roof is vented with screen over it, so that even, you know, it's hot here. Well, it depends hot where you are too, but I mean, if it's 100 degrees outside, it's probably only 80 in the loft, because I get that good draw of air up from the bottom and out the top. And then inside in the loft, the roofs and the sides are lined in case we, God forbid, have a hurricane and I lose the roof. There's a lining in there so that the birds don't go out when the roof comes off.
That's a great idea.
Have that happen. And
that's
just
a great
like,
idea. Lots of guys lose their chickens in the monsoon storms out here because they don't have, you know, things blow over.
Well, I did that about 6 years ago after I lost part of a roof. It wasn't technically considered a hurricane down here, but we had really high winds. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning and I heard the roof go. And I was outside at 4 o'clock in the morning in the middle of it all, trying with a flashlight to grab the birds that I could out of that loft and stuff them into another loft. I lost like half of the loft. Roof.
Man. So that'll motivate you to make some changes for sure.
Well, yeah, it did. I mean, you know, thankfully I didn't lose any of the palms. The palms were smart enough to be just like, no, I think we'll just stay right here. But my lucernes, they were just like poof, gone. And I don't know if they got blown out to sea or what happened. But I mean, everybody knows around here I raised them and what I raised. And no one was ever just like, you know, I got some of your weird looking birds over here in my yard. Because where I live, literally Gulf Coast Hunting Club is like 30 seconds from my house. I've got 3 pigeon stores within 6 minutes of my house. I live right in the middle of pigeon country.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's awesome. I'm moving to Florida.
Right?
Do the iguanas bother you?
No. I live too far north to have iguanas.
Okay.
I actually will get frozen water bowls and frost and stuff.
Really? Wow.
Nice.
We have cane toads, which are creepy, and like little lizards or annoles or whatever they are running around everywhere. But no, for the iguanas that come raining down out of the trees, you don't have to be in the teepees or someplace like that. We don't have that here. Yeah, the largest racing club in the United States is Gulf Coast Hunting Club, and they are literally, like, literally around the corner from my house.
Yeah, I heard that the post office of that town gets the highest amount of pigeon magazines than anywhere else in the country.
The post office at the airport here during racing season, you can go in there at any point in time and see like up to 100 boxes of pigeons coming in or out every day. Every day. So when I sell birds, you know, or when I get birds in, at least I know that they're going to be handled correctly on my end.
Right.
Now, no guarantees. I had bought some birds, and when we got them in, they were dead because someone at the post office had taken a forklift and driven the forklift through the box and impaled the bird.
Ouch, that's
terrible. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it was just like, you gotta be kidding me. Really?
What would you say would be for someone who's just kind of getting started in the fancy pigeon side of things, maybe even considering Pomeranians, what kind of tips would you give a beginner?
Have a good paying job or save you money or I'll hope to inherit.
Well, that's experience talking, people.
Yeah, you always want to get your kids, if you have kids, get them involved in pigeons because they will never have enough money to get drugs or alcohol. Never. You know, get them involved in pigeons. You won't have to worry about them, you know, going out and running around or anything.
Nice.
No, I don't, you know, start off with something easy. You know, there's a lot of nice breeds out there that are a little bit different looking, but they don't require, you know, extra vigilance or anything. I found that Indian fantails were very easy keepers. Old classic frills or modern frills, whatever you want to call them. Those are really nice
love
birds, too, to get started on. Because they come
that was my first
different colors. Yeah, you know, they come in all different colors and markings. They're really visually attractive birds. They don't have a short beak, so you don't have to hand feed them or have fosters or anything like that. They're healthy. They seem to be disease resistant. They have a nice personality. Either one of those would be a good breed that looks a little bit different than your standard pigeon look, you know. And they're easy keepers, they're easy breeders. I personally love to hand feed. I probably hand feed well over 100 babies every year because I also have a lot of short-faced birds also.
Okay. What are you feeding with, a tube with a ball on the end of it or what?
No, I actually buy paired hand feeding syringes, and I hand feed them with hand feeding syringes individually. And when they're real tiny, this past summer, I also, on top of everything else, I raised canaries, and I had a clutch of five that were abandoned, and so I hand raised from hatch five baby canaries using a little tiny pipette, and every 2 hours around the clock, as in set your alarm and wake up every 2 hours and go and hand feed them. All five of them fit in a tablespoon when they first hatched out.
Wow.
That's how tiny a canary baby is.
Canaries are neat.
Yeah, so just imagine hand feeding those. Little tiny, tiny. But I mean, like my, the Berliners and the Booties, when they hatch out, I don't know if they're even an inch long. I'll hand feed those from day one. I don't have a problem with it. I love to hand feed baby birds. I've got some palms that I've got out in the mudroom. When I had this house built, I specifically had a mudroom put on it for baby birds to go out in so that they're not in the house. They're in the mudroom because I have a no pigeons in the house rule. It's like, nope, no pigeons in the house. So they go out in the mudroom. During the daytime, they go out on the back porch where it's nice. I've got babies out there right now that I'm hand feeding.
This has been great. I like hearing about the ponds, and I like hearing all the tips and stuff that you're giving us and the listeners. It's been really informative.
Yeah, they're a nice bird. They're a friendly bird. They're just, like I said, they're one of those birds where you do really kind of have to keep a watch on them to make certain that nothing weird is going on with them. Like I said, you just can't go out there and be just like, hello, birds, here's your food. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye. You know, you really kind of do need to watch them and just make certain that everything is, you know, going right with them and catch any potential problems early. And then you don't have to worry about sauerkraut and bumblefoot and all the other, you know, woes that befall pigeons.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
I have one more question. If a guy was looking for Pomeranian powders, where would he go?
Well, it all depends on if he wants to pay for shipping or not. That is the one problem with them. People don't realize they're big birds. They mm-hmm. weigh a lot. The box weighs a lot. For me to ship a pair of Pomeranian powders, even to say, you know, Georgia or Alabama or someplace close by, because I just went through this 2 weeks ago, the box alone is about $50, brand new. You know, if I order a bird box from somebody and have it shipped to me, the box plus shipping is about $50. Then, for me to ship that big, heavy box with about 3 pounds of birds in it to you, even if you are literally an 8-hour drive away from me, is about $144. So you're looking at about $200, you know, just out the gate without even buying the birds. And I tell people, I said, you know, if you're within 6 hours, it's actually going to be cheaper for you to jump in your car and drive down here.
You said that was to ship a pair of birds that it costs around $200?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, in between the box and the shipping. The shipping for two birds in one of those 16-by boxes is about $144. Because I just did look it up for Alabama. And, you know, Alabama, I can hit Alabama in 6 hours from my home. You know, $144.
So you do ship out birds from time to time? Is it something you do often?
Yeah, I sell birds a lot, actually. But I just make certain people realize that it's not, you know, it's not a pair of figuritas in a 10 by 12 by 12 box for, you know, $56.
Sure. You're shipping a chicken.
You got big birds that weigh a lot, and I will not cram my birds into a tiny box. I will not do that to you. I will not cut off their tails to make them fit. I will not trim their feathers all the way down on their feet. I will trim them, you know, because if not, you get literally a crappy bird when you go to unpack it. But I'm not going to cut their tail off and do all kinds of other things and jam them in the box so that they're literally, you know, caboose to caboose in there. I won't do that to them. That's not right. If you want my birds, then you're going to have them shipped humanely.
But yeah, I'll tell you, if you're within driving distance, it'd be kind of fun to come down there and just check out Pigeon City, USA anyway.
Yeah, that's what I tell people. You know, I get a lot of people that are somewhat nearby. I had a guy who lived up by Gainesville, you know, and I said, you're like 3.5 hours away. I said, take a day off. I said, I'm retired. I've been retired for 13 years. I said, I can be up and home at any point in time you need me to be. I said, why don't you just take a day and drive down here, and then you can actually see what I have. I said, then you're going to save yourself a lot of money, and you're not going to, you know, leave your birds to the careful ministrations of the post office, shall we say.
Right, there you go. Yep. And I really like the breed. I like to see more of them at some of the shows. It's kind of the bigger shows that you see them at, but it'd be kind of neat to start seeing them more locally even.
Well, up until last year, whenever I would go to the Lancaster show, there was never any Pomeranians, as in like none, no Pomeranians at all. And then last year, being January of 2023, I think somebody brought one. And then I think this year there was a couple. But up until the 2023, whenever I had went there, there was never even one Pomeranian there, because they're a bigger bird. You can't put them in a standard carrier. I have custom-made carriers for my Pomeranians because they won't fit correctly into a standard carrier. So I have custom-made carriers for them. When I pack up and go to a show, they go in their custom carriers so that they can stand up straight, they can move around. You know, I don't want to get there and have to take the birds into the bathroom and wash them. They arrive nice and clean and shiny the way they were when I packed them.
That's why miniature poultry is such a big deal at the poultry shows. Because they're easy to
oh yeah.
Easy keep.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got little figurines out here. It's great. I can cram 20 of them in a small box and they're fine, and they show up nice and clean and shiny because they've got, you know, they're clean legged and everything. And then I've got these great big huge carriers that I can put like one German cropper and four palms in, and that's about it. And the carrier's like five times the size of what I have, like the Berliners or the Booties or the Zitterhals in. So it's just when you decide to raise the bigger birds, you just have to take into consideration that no, it's not a homing pigeon. You know, it's 3 or 4 times the size of a homing pigeon, therefore plan accordingly. You know, don't complain about how much money you spend on food for them. Yeah. You know, bigger birds gonna eat more.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. Well, thank you, Bonnie. Really appreciate your time and all the information that you've been sharing with us.
Yeah, thank you,
you're more than welcome. Okay, thank you.